They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
What up, though, One Pride? This is the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, a podcast where One Pride goes worldwide. My name is Anthony Fitzpatrick. I'm joined this evening by Ryan McCluskey. It is a Wednesday evening, which can only mean one thing. It is the college football podcast. And Ryan, the path to the draft, we are firmly on it now. The All-Star games are all in the books. Some players have had time to shine. Some players haven't shined so much, but it's getting serious now. We get into the all the big boy stuff when it comes to the draft.
Yeah, the practices have been long. They've been hard. A lot have stood out. The games, which in their own selves don't really matter. They're kind of just a crescendo, kind of just a celebration of a hard week of practice. But yeah, they've gone now. And we're now on the verge of pro days, essentially. Right now, we are in the firm run to the combine. And everything now is either you're trending up or you're trending down. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for some of the smaller school guys, for some of the smaller prospects, these games are the ultimate time to be able to break out, show against better opposition that you can do it. And let's just say there were a few guys who have turned a few heads and who are getting a lot more chatter now as we go on. So today we are going to be reviewing the Shrine Bowl. Obviously, the Shrine and the Senior happened last week. I did say maybe we were going to do both of them, but actually, it takes a long time to do notes for one of these games. You've got to do the game, you've got to do practices, all that sort of stuff. So we want to show love to the guys this week rather than just try and rush through. So this week, we're going to be taking a look at the Shrine Bowl in particular. We're going to go through the game and then we're going to take a little look at who did well in training, summarize up, and that'll be us for this week, and we'll look at the Senior Bowl next. But before we do, let's just get all the housekeeping and bits and bobs out the way. So Roar of the Lions UK Discord, if you want in on that, let us know. We'll fire you across a link for that. Main podcast this week, we were looking at the Detroit Lions cap situation for 2024, and we took a little look at the Super Bowl as well and loads of other Lions news tidbits and whatnot. So if you've not seen that, go do check it out. Next week, we are going to be revealing our award nominations for our end of season award show, which is taking place a lot later than it usually does. But we want all your input into it as well. So come join us for that. There are our fan awards that we have. We need your participation to make it the great night that it is. Don't forget about Lions Nation Unite, Herman Moore's pet project to bring together the best in Lions YouTube content creators from across the web. We're part of that. Loads of great guys on there as well. Don't forget, we are Twitch affiliated. We are monetized on YouTube. We have a tip jar. So if you want to help us that way, great. But we just love having you all in the building. And we've got a feedback form as well. So anything you might want us to do on the shows, any feedback you got, fill it in. We will take it all on board. I apologize if I'm sniffly today, but just had a chest infection this week. So please do bear with me. So yeah, that's all the little bits out the way. Let's give a shout out to everyone who's in with us this evening. Mike the Marine is in on Twitch. Hope you are doing well there, Mike. Seeing Lisa DeLorenzo in the building on YouTube. She says, hey everyone, hope you're doing well. Bob O'Lan is in as well. If you've got any questions you want to ask us through the evening, college related, then just let us know and we'll get through to those at some point. Okay. Believe that's all the little bits out the way there. So let's get straight into the Shrine Bowl. And Ryan, I don't know how much of a chance you got to watch it. I've seen it all, but just high-level stuff. It was a cracking game. I mean, there are a lot of good performances in this. This is one of the better iterations of the Shrine Bowl I think I've seen in recent years.
Yeah, I've watched extended highlights. I've been through the notes and read through Sports Illustrated, like what they said about it. In recent years, this game has been, it's been a damp squib. I'd say for both sides, most recently in recent years, it's been sometimes a bit lopsided, but also it's been sometimes just incompetitive. And the issue with these games is always when you've got so many quarterbacks coming in and out, there's just like there's no rhythm. Like say you can have like four downs and three quarterbacks will take a snap and they're all trying to vie for playing time. It's always a bit chaotic. But a lot of the we saw like say good run game, some receivers stood out, offensive line play defense. Yeah, we really saw some good sides of the ball. The team that won thoroughly deserved to win because like I said, they work together better as a unit, even though the guys don't know each other. They did just work on the day itself. They came together and they were a bit more organized. They were a bit more on the ball with one another after the week of practice. But it's always difficult to judge the games because a lot of these guys, some of them never met each other. It's kind of hard to just build that sync up in a week. But yeah, it was a good game. And yeah, there were some standout performances. Like say you had quarterback play, you had special teams. You had some good scores, like you had everything you kind of want from a game that you've not seen in the last couple of years.
Exactly. So we're going to go through the game first and then we're going to talk about training. So bear with me this year. I'm literally still doing my notes on this now. So while Ryan's thinking, you'll see me furiously scribbling notes away. But what I've done is I thought, you know what, let's go through this thing and break it down. So I've done the drive-by-drive for this, the plays. We can talk about the guys who did well and, yeah, we'll just show them love as they go along. So with the Shrine Bowl, you get an East and a West team, obviously. It's the East-West Shrine Bowl. It is the 99th iteration of the game. So next year is going to be year 100. So who knows what they are going to do with that. The West team kicked off in this one. And first play of the game made by Canadian football legend Quantes Stiggers, who on special teams gets the tackle. Because in this game, they only do kickoffs at the start of the halves. So that's it. They start the 20 for the rest of it, 25 for the rest of it, sorry. But yeah, Quantes Stiggers, really good tackle from him to bring the returner down at the 25. The East got the ball first. Their first drive was headlined by Jack Plummer, the quarterback out of Louisville. He started with his running back compadre, Isaac Guerrero, in the backfield. He got stuffed on the first play of the game. Muasau, the UCLA linebacker, hit a gap in the offensive line and absolutely obliterated him, stuffed the run for no gain. Plummer then attempted to find Casey Washington, but then great pass breakup by Quantes Stiggers. Really tight coverage, avoided any form of early contact, got his hand in the way of the pass before it was made. So pass breakup on second down. And then on third down, Plummer forced a throw away under pressure from Miles Murphy, the UNC defensive lineman. And they had to punt it away. The punt was returned to the 42 by Beanie Bishop. But first drive, Ryan, and one name stands out. The CFL enigma, who knows what's going on with him, but if you want to raise eyebrows in your direction, make a play on special teams, make a really good pass breakup as well. He's the guy who shone to start this.
Yeah, and the game training, he already looked like a guy that knew what he was doing. They say he's not much older. Actually, he's younger than a lot of people there. He's shown that he kind of understands pro football. Like you say, he understands how to work in zone. And he's shown that throughout the entire week. Like, for someone so young, he looks like he's head and shoulders, like more mature than some of the other guys. Maybe not more talented, but the fact he's kind of been there in a locker room, he's done it. It paid dividends and it showed it on this first drive as well. This guy knows that he needs the better camp and game than a lot of the other guys because there's still a lot of question marks around him. There's still a lot of guys out there. Don't know who he is, don't know what he's about, and aren't quite sure about him. He's got to win over a lot more people because, like I say, his only ever experience of college was a HBCU, and he never actually got there because I think the COVID year cancelled it. So he never played college, so he has taken a conventional route and has found himself back here. But, yeah, great start. I couldn't have asked for much better start, if I'm honest, because he will be potentially one of the biggest risers from this whole process.
Yeah, and like this West defense was absolutely stacked full of talent in this. But yeah, Mouassal made the big play to start off the game, set the tone. That is what they did. So then the West, their first drive at their own 42, they're quarterbacked by Keaton Slovis to start this one off. Slovis first pass to Frank Gore Jr. for 3 yards. Then Frank Gore gets a carry on the ground for 2 yards. Then there's a neutral zone infraction by the East defense. Mohamed Camara, the edge from Colorado State, leaves them third and short. Even though they were at third and five, they were like at third and inches. And that is when one of the best plays of the games happens from the West's own 49. Frank Gore Jr. takes it to the house for a touchdown. The left half of the West's offensive line does a terrific seal job. Just absolutely blocks out everyone in the interior. Gore hits a gap on the left. Joshua Cephas, the wide receiver from UTSA, he has a really great block on the outside to kind of seal up the route for him. Springs Gore loose. He outpaces three defenders to go all the way to the house for a 49-yard carry for him. They try a two-point conversion because you don't have point after attempts in these games. You've got to do 2 points. They give it to Gore to run it in, but he's stuffed. But 6-0 to the West after their first drive. And, you know, one of the biggest profile names, Ryan, you put the ball in his hand, he does the work there for him. And one of the things about they say about him, the speed, the top end speed isn't quite there. I mean, it sure as hell looked like it was here. It was great work by the offensive line, terrific work by Joshua Cephas, and Gore does what Gores do. They run for a lot of yards and they get touchdowns.
Yeah, the drive had kind of stalled at this point, third and short, and you just think he's short, he's stocky, just give him it, power it over and get the first down. But no, like I say, he gets a hole, he's got good vision, and yeah, he's able to find that second, third, fourth gear, kick through. Like I say, the outside, there's a guy taken out and he's just got a lane, just gets the head down, swaps the ball, knows it's in the right hand, and then from straight on, it's a foot race to the pylon, essentially. He knows where he's got to go. And yeah, shot out of a cannon. For someone that they say is more of a workhorse guy and more of a physical downhill north and south runner, he showed that he's got the ability to outpace multiple defenders. And he couldn't have, he needed that more than anyone. Like I say, a lot of people doubt him. They say, oh, the hype is because of his name and he's only done it at a small school. But yeah, he was literally, he broke that drive open at the first opportunity, and his hard work for the day was basically done on that one play. But that's all he needed to do. You get one chance and you take it. And yeah, the drive went from potentially in the mud to instantly just straight up scoring. And I love the fact they don't kick. Even though you've got kickers there and special teamers, like it's a bit pointless, but they make them go for two because it's just not fun. But yeah, good stuff. But yeah, great start for them. You couldn't have asked for a better response after getting a three and out to then just go up 6-0.
Exactly. Complimentary ball at its best. Moving on to the East second drive. Jack Plummer to Dalen Holker, the Colorado State tight end for 8. He finds the soft zone in coverage. He's really damn good at doing that. Running back Tyrone Tracy from Purdue then gets a run for 6. He then gets a run for 4. And then has his biggest run of the day for 9. However, Penn State right tackle Caden Wallace gets pinged for holding. That negates that run there. Plummer then tries to target Dalen Holker again, throws just a little too high for him. In fairness, Holker does really well to even get hands on the ball at all. Plummer is then sacked by USC edge Solomon Bird, but illegal contact penalty gives the offense a first down. They get away with one there, but it was a great play by Bird. It was a speed rush from him, and he absolutely destroys Julian Pearl, the right tackle from Illinois, who had a rough game. Then in comes Louisiana running back Kibode. I didn't realize he was at this. I think he was a late replacement, but Kibode carries for 13, then gets a reception for 10 out on the perimeter. Great stutter step to force a missed tackle, but another holding call brings it back again. Walter Rouse was guilty this time. So the offense is going forward and back, forward and back. Then Kibode gets a run for 10 to get the penalty yardage back. Plummer tries to go deep to Cornelius Johnson, the Michigan wide receiver, misses him. But then on 3rd and 10, Dalen Holker again catches it at about 8 yards in, so he's got 2 yards to go, has two defenders on him. Man just powers through them to make the line to gain. It was great work from him to convert the third and long. Isaac Garendo, he then gets a run for 1 yard. Plummer, incomplete pass on third. Well, Plummer has an incomplete pass next, sorry. And then on 3rd and 9, Dalen Holker again makes this unreal catch on the sideline. He's falling out of bounds with a man on his back. He somehow catches it and gets a foot down. Doesn't convert it, but it leads to a 4th and 1, which they are able to convert. Plummer hits Tajuan Palmer, the UAB wide receiver, on a slant to convert that 4th down. At this point, the West are in the red zone at the 9-yard line. Plummer has to throw away under pressure from UCLA edge Grayson Murphy, who destroys... Plummer throws away under pressure. 2nd down, UCLA edge Grayson Murphy destroys Julian Pearl again on a speed rush, gets a big 9-yard sack to send them in the wrong direction. Miles Murphy, the UNC D lineman, he then gets another huge sack. He bull rushes the left guard, gets to Plummer as he tries to escape the pocket. Harrison Meavis, the thicker kicker, comes on 46 yards for a field goal. It's a great kick because it's quite far out there, but he hits it right down Broadway. It's an 11-minute drive, but it only ends in 3 points, Ryan. But when we were asked the question, like, who were you looking for? You know, who was going to be your surprise guy, the guy you were looking forward to seeing in this? You said Dalen Holker, the Colorado State tight end. He made some huge plays on this drive. 3rd down and long, he's your go-to. And boy, oh boy, did he look good.
Yeah, he just shown that in tight scenarios, in tight windows, in contested catches, he's got the pure determination to get the ball in and fight for every single yard. And that's probably one of the big traits about him. Over the middle of the field, where it looks like he's in no man's land and he's just going to get brought down, he can surprise you. Like I say, he's able to scurrow his way for the 1st down. And then the concentration out of bounds, like I say, to not just secure the ball, which would have been pretty, but to get the toes in, make it count, that just shows like elite IQ to know where he is and control his body. But the whole drive was just messy. They know Plummer is a pocket passer and he's not mobile, so they get the fast guys on the edge. And they caused havoc for the offensive line. Like I said, they just went straight up. I'm going to go around you or through you, but I'm going to go as fast as I can. And they couldn't handle it. And in the end, it murders the drive, unfortunately. So, yeah. But at least then we saw a good kick. So at least two people on that drive did themselves credit. Holker and the kicker, Meavis. So, yeah, good to get on the board, but a very long drive, which was frustrating. But you can kind of see now that teams are sending pressure. They're recognising these quarterbacks are there. They've sent out Kinsler, his first employer. They're less mobile pocket passers, and then they're just starting to like get their speed rushes on. So the coaches know who they want to see in those kind of matchups.
Yeah, it was Julian Pearl. He had a rotten drive, the Illinois right tackle. So, yeah, he's not very good against speed rushers. And it shows, but great for them to be able to stand up. Grayson Murphy, I've seen him popping him in mocks for Lions. Miles Murphy had a terrific game. Like, I need to give him another look, the UNC lineman as well. But he was a monster on this one. So the West's 2nd drive... Keaton Slovis finds Jaden Yankee as the South Dakota State Twins start to get in on the action. 4-5. Jabari Small, the Tennessee running back, gets a run for 3, but that is negated by holding on the West Virginia tackle, Doug Nestor. And that's the end of the 1st quarter. So it was an 11-minute drive for a field goal. That 1st quarter passes really, really quickly. The West switch out Keaton Slovis then for Taulia Tungvailoa, younger brother of Tua, Maryland quarterback, and his first play of the game, we all know him, a huge throw downfield to Jaden Yankey. He blows open coverage on a go route. Lovely safe pair of hands. Like, this is the easiest catch he's made in his life, it looks like. He then stutter steps Marcellus Dial, the South Carolina quarterback. Just leaves him for dead, gets another 5 yards, but then Dial's able to recover and brings him down. But it's a 52-yard chunk play there. Jabari Small then runs tough up the gut for 12 yards. There was a really good block from Isaac Rex, the BYU tight end, to spring him there. Small then has a really bad drop, though, as they're in the red zone at this point. Talia then has a pass broken up by Chigozie Anousium, the Colorado State cornerback, but he's guarding Jaden Yankey again, and Jaden Yankey gets a DPI call from him. He kind of beats him to it. Chigozie has to sort of get handsy with him, gets the DPI call in the end zone, so the ball's put at the 2-yard line. Taulia scrambles out to the right. He jukes Khalid Duke. That is not a joke I made intentionally, but the Kansas State edge Khalid Duke comes after him. He stutter steps, leaves him for dead, runs in for the touchdown. Taulia doing Taulia things. Then on the 2-point conversion, Josh Cephas, UTSA wide receiver, my favorite prospect, one of in the draft, he just finds himself all alone in the end zone, scores for 2 points, 14-3 to the West at this point, 2 drives, 2 touchdowns, Ryan, and we get to see the, well, Jaden at this point, Yankey, making plays downfield in the end zone. If you need a DPI call, getting all the little bits and the tricks in the book out for him. He was big on this drive, and Taulia comes in with a bang.
Yeah, you know when Taulia's coming in, the first player call is going to be a bomb. He's a one-trick pony to me, but that's not to say he doesn't do his one trick pretty well. He's got a strong arm, and like I say, his deep ball on the go route, usually, yeah, he can drop that in the bucket. And yeah, it was a lovely crisp route. Fair play to Marcel. He did recover, like you said, to make the tackle. Otherwise, it probably would have been a house call. But yeah, those two, it just shows that even though, like, Tolly was kind of, it was a late call-up as well, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so they come in, they're, like, they're already on the same page. And then, yeah, the nice little play for the scamper to score a touchdown as well, like, leaves a guy for dead. And then just cannons in. But yeah, good drive and a quick drive as well, like fairly explosive. So that's kind of what you need. And you already see what they're going to do. Like, they've got a really good set of offensive weapons. It's in the West side. So yeah. And Jabari Smalls, we know what Jabari is. He's a little bowling ball, isn't he? Like you say, he does the dirty work. He's physical. And that's, some guys love that. He's not exactly always pretty, but in the end, he gets the job done. And it helps them move the chains. So yeah, this was a pretty splash, bang, bang drive. And it didn't take long at all to extend the lead.
No. And you got to see one of the Yankees really shine on that one. So like, that's good for them. Sure, you can do it against some of these DBs because there's some very talented DBs on the East side. So it's 14-3 to the West. Going on to the East's third drive. It's their first of the second quarter. Devin Leary, Kentucky quarterback, comes in. First play for him, he finds Tip Ryman, the Illinois tight end, for 13 yards. Jaden Sheridan, the Monmouth running back, then gets his only carry of the game. He goes for 3 yards. Leary then finds Illinois wide receiver Isaiah Williams for 3, leaving a 3rd and 4th. But it's a really lovely pass breakup from Tyler Owens, the safety from Texas Tech, who had a terrific game. This was on Dallin Holker. They tried to go for him again on 3rd down. He gets a step in front of him. He jumps the route to break it up. They punt. They return it to the West 22. And at this point, Ryan, like you said, momentum. You know, these guys, they don't look like they're in sync with one another. But the West defense, I mean, it's really good. It's holding up well against the run. You're getting your secondary guys done good. And Tyler Owens looked really good in this. He's underrated coming into this draft.
Yeah, both Texas Tech safeties, like I say, had phenomenal weeks. Like I say, they've done themselves the world of good. But yeah, West have come out of the gates a lot quicker. Offense looked good. Defense, they look like they've kind of narrowed in what the East want to do. And that's what they want to go at the tight end. Like I say, take their targets away, put them on an island, and life will be a lot easier. So, yeah, they adjusted quicker, and it showed, like I say, score, and then what did you do? You force a quick three and out. So, yeah, West are in this point, are in pretty much command right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So they get the ball back for their fourth drive, and it's going to be the last one. Hang on, am I doing my pages right here? No, sorry, their third drive. I apologize. I went page too quick. And they're back on, and Blake Watson, the Memphis and Old Dominion running back, comes in, and what a day this guy has. So his first run is for 5 yards up the gut. Taulia then on the RPO finds Josh Cephas for another six for the first down. Frank Gore Jr. comes back in. He gets another six. It's a power run up the middle from him. Taulia then has an incomplete pass to Josh Cephas. It's low. It is a drop, but it is quite low. It is quite a difficult catch to make. But you get to third and fourth, and once again, they give it to Frank Gore. He runs for 11. Again, up the middle, power run, 11 yards, takes a couple of guys with him, converts for the first down. Taulia then a little outside toss to Taj Washington, the USC wide receiver, just gets one. He then gets a run for nine on a scramble, Taulia does, but then that is negated by a holding call on Josiah Ezerim. He's the tackle from Eastern Kentucky, one of the FCS prospects. But then one of the throws of the game, Taulia has to scramble out of pressure on second and 19, and he finds the throw to Taj Washington, who's about 4 yards short of the line to gain. He breaks three tackles and takes another man with him as he converts for the first down. It's a really physical play. He really fought hard for his yards. Then Frank Gore comes back in again. He hits a seam through the middle. He breaks Trey Taylor's ankles. He's the safety from Air Force who had an incredibly good week. But in this case, Gore just left him for dead, completely misses the tackle Trey Taylor does, and Gore is dragged down after he gets into the five. But then there's a botch snap, which Taulia has to fall onto on first down. Gore gets the yard back to the original line of scrimmage on second down. Then they take a delay of game penalty for 5 yards, which takes them back to the 11-yard line. And then Taulia dumps it off to Jabari Small for a 1 yard gain. Cam Little, the Arkansas kicker, comes in for the field goal. 17-3 to the West after the third. But as we've seen, right, the run game continues to impact there. Frank Gore, just like they just hand it to him on third down. The man just gets his yards. He finds a seam, he hits it, and once he's through it, it's just incredibly hard to bring him down. And him and Taj Washington on this drive really standing out.
Yeah, things have started to click for the West pretty good. And they've just got a plethora of weapons. I was just more impressed with their roster in general on paper and as the week went. But yeah, Frank Gore, he's a pretty simple running back. Like you say, he kind of just wants to hit the hole. He'll get through the hole. And if someone's there on the other side, try and make them miss. He's stocky, got a low center of gravity. He's tough, he's physical to bring down. And for someone of Trey Taylor's like actual standards in run support, you usually expect a lot better from the Air Force safety. Like you say, he didn't usually fold that easily, but no, he did. Yeah, he gave up quite a big play, then he's dragged down. And then you see the issues, like say, you see penalties, botched snaps from players that you don't really expect. You expect that from because they don't know each other well. They've only practiced for a few days. So those kind of things you do expect, those lack of communications. And in the end, the East defense does pretty well to hold and force a field goal because they were backed right up to their goal and essentially. So yeah, it took some things to go their way, but don't be happy with that result. But yeah, they're struggling to contain the run. The O-line for the West, when it's not holding, is actually forcing large holes, especially in the middle. Like I said, they're having their way with like the nose tackle and interior defensive line. They're just not getting there and plugging up any of their gaps. So right now, they're winning all their battles. And Taulia is playing really well, actually. I'll give him credit to that. He did have a pretty good day for someone who arrived pretty late. Because if it wasn't for the denied waiver, he wouldn't even have been there because he was planning to stay in college. But that was now not an option. So he's a very interesting product. And it's going to be interesting to see how all the comparisons to his brother start from now. He's not going to hear the end of it between now and the draft about him against Tua.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, 17-3 at this point. West have scored on all three of their drives, although just a
Felt
field
ominous
goal.
at this point.
It did actually. It was like, this is, I was so impressed by the way they were playing. And then it just got even worse for the East. Their fourth drive, Devin Leary finds Isaiah Williams, the Illinois wide receiver, for 9 yards. It's a really good low catch for him. He has to go down, get it low. He gets back up, gets a few more yards. But then they have a run stuffed for a 1 yard tackle for loss. So they're back to third and two at this point. And then Leary finds Tyrone Tracy with a pass on the perimeter, and Tyler Owens with one of the best tackles of the day. He just trucks up from his safety position and spears him out of play short of the line to gain, making it fourth and one and forcing them to punt. And just like that, three and out. But I mean, this West defense, Rye, was just, it was on fire to start off this. But again, Tyler Owens coming up, great closing speed. Hits heavy and he hits properly. It's like he didn't miss his tack, could have been easy to miss. He just trucked him out of play and another dead drive thanks to him.
Yeah, the West defense was doing what the East wasn't. It was getting penetration. Like I said, they're getting in the backfield. Like I said, they're making running backs have to change their course or they're bringing them down. And if they can't, they're coming down from the box or they're coming down really quickly to make these tackles and stop them short six. I couldn't believe, to be honest, they didn't go for it. I hate punts in this kind of game. 4-1-1, you've got to be a bit more imaginative than just give that away. But yeah, great tackle. It just gives him no room to kind of squirm out and get the extra yard. Just barrels him out of bounds. But yeah, great just recognition of a route. And then when you see that it's going to be completed, just come down like a dart.
Yeah, absolutely. Just absolutely perfect technique from him there. And this leaves them still in a 17-3 hole. At this point, it's near the end of the first half. There's 1:18 left as the West get the ball back for a fourth drive. And you only get two timeouts in this game, not three, which comes into play here. Incomplete pass to Blake Watson from Taulia to start. Then Taulia has to throw away under pressure from Mohamed Camara, who had a pretty decent game. He forces him to throw it away. On the third down, though, Blake Watson, really great play from him. So he sort of sneaks out the backfield by the tackle. He gets tripped. He then gets up. He catches it 8 yards short, 8 yards short of the line to gain. They're backed up right by their own end zone at this point. He's got a man in front of him. He fakes out that man, who is Easton Gibbs, the Wyoming linebacker, gets around the edge of him, takes it all the way to the 30. And it's the Arizona State DB, Roe Torrence, who finally is able to tackle him down. Otherwise, could have been a lot bigger than that. But big play there from Watson. He then gets a check down for another 8 yards, forces another missed tackle on there. Blake Watson does. So good couple of catches for him. Taulia then throws it too high for Taj Washington. Jabari Small then gets a run for one, leaves them fourth and one. They've not quite converted at this point. He's able to convert it on the next. They go for it on fourth and one, right by their own end zone. He gets 2 yards. Taulia then converts a pass to Taj Washington again up to the 50, but they've used their timeouts at this point. They run out of time. End of the half, 17-3 to the West. And, you know, we've seen Frank Gore make the plays there, but then Blake Watson comes in. We've talked about him a lot. He was in my team to watch on this. The Old Dominion guy, you know, Memphis guy. Runs really well, but can he receive? And they used him as a receiver as a lot in this game, but he showed flashes just before the half, right?
Yeah, Frank and I say they Blake really complement each other well. Frank doing the dirty stuff, Blake was getting the prettiest stuff. But like I say he has got, I think he's got better hands than Frank. That's probably why he's able to get the ball, secure it, and then he's not just looking like where's the marker and down. He actually turns upfield, and he's willing to make guys try and miss in the open field. He is a good natural receiver and. He understands route recognition. Like you say, when you sneak him out of the backfield, when he gets the ball, he knows which way he's going. He's aware of where the linebackers are. And like you say, he's able to then try turn up and make something happen. And yeah, if not a good tackle, that would have been a much bigger gain. Like I say, it was a good recognition to go for it. But yeah, right now, West, they're running the ball well. Their offensive line is probably doing a bit better job keeping Taulia clean. They've got a pair of good running backs. Like I say, the receivers are doing good. Blocking as well as they are tackling. But yeah, total control, And the East, they just could not get anything going in that first half. If the quarterbacks weren't being pressured, it was penalties. Like I say, it was holding. Like I say, things like that were things that were just really frustrating. But yeah, a good half of football from the West, especially.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving into the third quarter, and the great thing for the West was they get the ball back to start the half. So it goes from the West's fourth drive to the West's fifth drive. Daquan Hardy returned the kick back to the 21. Mason Plumlee, the UCF quarterback, comes in at this point, and his first pass is to Blake Watson, who is still in on a throwback. They start the half with a throwback screen. Blake Watson, really clever. He falls in behind the South Dakota State guard, Mason McCormick. He literally taps him on the shoulder, goes, "I'm here with you." McCormick shovels out a rushing lane, like knocks two guys out the way. 26-yard gain from Blake Watson. Terrific play from him and McCormick. Like I say, just taps him on the shoulder. He's like, "Okay, let's get going." It's quite funny, actually. Blake Watson then bursts through a hole in the defensive line for a 17-yard gain. Really powerful run from him once more. Marcellus Dial brings him down eventually. And then Plumlee rolls out the pocket, hits Josh Cephas, who was on a crosser. He runs hard for another 18, as it's just like punch, punch, punch from the offense at this point. But then the defense hits back. So David Owebu, the Houston edge, he pressures Plumlee out the pocket and then into Richard Gibanor, who's the Troy edge's path. Gibanor tags him down for a massive loss. However, it is negated by an illegal touching penalty by Easton Gibbs, the Wyoming linebacker. Plumlee then misses a wide-open Isaac Rex in the end zone, but he's kind of has his blushes spared because Garrett Greenfield, the other South Dakota State offensive lineman in the game, he gets pinged for holding. So at this point, it's first and 20 at the 23-yard line in the East's half. Plumlee dumps off to Watson, but then Aaron Casey, the Indiana linebacker, comes up with a big hit for a 3-yard tackle for loss. Plumlee to Watson again after this. He gets 13 yards back. It's a screen. He's able to get a big chunk of it back. Then Plumlee throws to Blake Watson yet again. He gets another 8 yards on third and 10. But then Dylan McMahon, the center from NC State, my center, he gets pinged for being illegally downfield. So then it goes back to third and 15. Then Plumlee goes for Jackson Yankee, the other Yankee brother, in the end zone. Jackson draws DPI against Renardo Green, the Florida State cornerback. And because it's in the end zone, it gets placed at the one. And Plumlee and Watson then pull off the most perfect fake handoff you've ever seen in your life. Mason Plumlee keeps it, goes around the edge for a score. And then they do the exact same thing on the two-point conversion. Another perfect fake handoff. And Plumlee converts. But Isaac Rex gets pinged for holding on Aaron Casey for a 10-yard penalty. So it ends with a two-pointer from 13 yards. Renardo Green breaks up a pass from Plumlee to Josh Cephas. It's 23-3 to the West. I mean, everything happening on the West's fifth drive. The offense with a few punches, the defense punches back. Then they both start committing penalties. But then, ultimately, Jackson Yankee getting the DPI penalty, they're able to get it in, and the West continues its domination after a pretty good run, right?
Yeah. At this point, the defense has just got no answer for Blake Watson. Like, they're just dumping it out to him. Like, they're just saying, like, toss it out to him, screen out to him. They're just saying, well, go on, make a player. They're going to come downhill, make them miss, get a lead blocker in front of him, like they do really well. And yeah, he's just off to the races. And he's very comfortable with that ball out in space with people out in front of him and trust his abilities to make the miss. So they keep going back to the watering hole multiple times. The most of the drive is between, like I said, Plumlee, Blake Watson. And it does work. They get some large chunk plays, which afford them that kind of cushion to take some bad penalties because they get deep pretty quickly and they work their way back. In the end, yeah, and the other Yankees now penalised in the end zone, or draws a flag. And then, yeah, lovely handoff. They just fake handoff. They just saunter in, try it again, and it would have worked if not for another holding call. But yeah, right now the East, they're knackered. Their defense, it's reeling. They're struggling to like make tackles in the open field. They can barely get a hand on Watson, and the fact that their quarterbacks on the West have been told like get the ball out really quickly. Like I say, so the D-line or the line, because like I say, they can't get called for holding, they can't get sacks, and they're kind of, it's working. The defense is just reacting from the snap of the ball because it's already out so quickly. So it's really frustrating for these. They really don't have any answers. They're just hoping that their West starts to hurt itself with penalties, but they keep digging themselves out of holes. They had three quarterbacks now on drives that have all scored, and they've all had like multiple penalties in each drive. And like I said, you expect them with guys that are on each other, but then they do well to recover from it. So it's pretty good performance right now from the guys that didn't know each other probably a week ago.
No, and for Blake Watson, like, this is how you begin to see these guys, how they use them in practice. Like, everyone knows Blake Watson's a great running back. Can he be a receiver? I don't know. Let's keep throwing it and throwing it and throwing it to him. What can we do? He works well as a receiver in this game, and like that is going to help him no end going forward, the amount of catches he had, the amount of yards after catch he was able to get. But again, like, it's the South Dakota State boys, the Yankees. Is that a sort of a modus thing of theirs, like end zone drawing DPI, stuff like that? Or is that something a bit new for them? Because it seemed like DBs were just sort of grabbing and grabbing because it's very hard to contain them when they get in there.
I think it's a case of because they're both like 6'3", 2'5", 2'10". They're pretty physical specimens. I think some of the guys struggle to compete with that. And they get overzealous. So when they try to hold them, they draw physicality because they're well stacked guys. Yeah, so that they don't surprise me. And they know their threats. Guys will probably go to any lengths to stop them. And in the end, they just hurt themselves by giving away penalties. But yeah, if you can't get the ball, drawing a penalty is essentially the next best thing is the completion.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's what you want in that situation. You want to be able to at least have the possibility there. Toss it up, see if you can get a flag. And they did so. But needless to say, at this point, a few guys on the West defense stood up. Aaron Casey, we'll talk about him a little bit later. And David Ogwebu looked great as well. But on to the East's fifth drive. And at this point, as I say, it's 23-3 to the West. They're in a spot of bother. Devin Leary finds Michigan wide receiver Cornelius Johnson for 12. Isaac Garendo, the Louisville running back, he then hits the edge round the left, gets a big run for 25 yards. Really good work by the offensive line to seal that off. Then they get fancy. They give an end around to Isaiah Williams, the Illinois wide receiver. That goes for 20. Down to the West 16-yard line. He was very shifty and very nimble on that. Hit a small pocket, got into it, exploited it for maximum yardage. Leary tries to find Cornelius Johnson again in the end zone, but really good coverage from Jaquan Shepherd. He's the Maryland cornerback. And then Leary has to throw it away twice. The second one, it's a miscommunication with Williams, who was meant to hit an out to the edge. He doesn't. He sort of goes on a go, and the ball just gets thrown into no man's land. And then on 4th and 10 from the 16, Devin Leary scrambles, but inexplicably, he decides to slide. He's about 7 yards in, and he's about to get tackled. So he slides. So he's short. So it's a turnover on downs. And once again, right, so if you're seeing some plays, Isaiah Williams come into life a little bit from Cornelius Johnson. But again, the West's defense stands up in the red zone. A lot of pressure, makes the plays when it needs to.
Yeah. The East realise they're falling behind quickly. They need to kind of do something. So they go like a quick offensive tempo, which is good. End around, like say, if you've got a guy that's got fast and he's hard to tackle in the open field, then it's the only real way to guarantee getting the ball in someone's hands is letting them basically take it from the snap. So that was a good play. And right now they're hitting the West with what hurt them. Chunk players. Like I said, they're going 15, 15, 20. The next thing they know, they're in the red zone. And yeah, right now, like I said, the D-line gets a bit of pressure. Leary don't really like it. Like I said, once he's kind of like unsettled and uncomfortable, that kind of rhythm is in with that receivers and that it goes. And then I don't know if he must forget it's fourth down. Instead of like just going head first to like the yard line, he slides and turns the ball over. Like, it was odd. It was a bit of a brain dead moment, like you say, which I'm not going to hold it against him, but yeah, you don't know when these guys are running the wrong route. He expects to see an out route just at, like, to take it out towards the sideline, and there's just no one there. So those things, like, he can't help.
No, and it's not often, I guess, that you scramble on a fourth and it's not often you go for a fourth and 10, I guess, as well. So,
no, in his real life, you're just kicking a field goal, right?
Exactly. So you're three scores down at this point, you're going for it. You can kind of forgive that. But yeah, it's a turnover on downs. The West sixth drive starts on their own nine. So Mason Plumlee, first off, finds Jackson Yankee for 11 on a comebacker route to get the first down. Jabari Small then has a run for 1 yard. Plumlee to Jackson Yankee again for 12. Very physical play. He had two defenders with him after the catch. Managed to get a few yards as well. Get another first down. Plumlee then finds Mason Fairchild, the Kansas tight end, but that's just for one. Plumlee then has a pass battered by Trayman Marshall, the Alabama linebacker. And then the big play finally that changes it all round. David Ugwebu, again, the Houston edge, with the sack to force them to punt. He's battling hard with the TCU tight end Andrew Coker, and he's able to disengage as Plumlee tries to sneak out the pocket, takes him down, and then the West has to punt, which leads to what might have been the turning point here. So the punt is huge, goes all the way back to the East's 20 and is caught by Oregon State wide receiver Anthony Gould, who, before I say this, had two punt return touchdowns in his collegiate career. So he catches it. He makes one man miss right away. Like, the dude tries to tackle him and flies about 20 yards in another direction. It's hilarious. He spins out of a second tackle. He jukes a third defender, hits a seam, avoids a diving fourth tackle, takes it all the way to the house for a 70-yard return touchdown. And it was his first touch of the ball of the game. Austin Reed, who's the new quarterback by this point for them, his first throw, it's a really great one. He's falling back. He finds the Oklahoma wide receiver Drake Stoops, son of Bob, for the two-point conversion. And just like that, it's 23-11 to the West, and they have life. And it takes a little bit of love from special teams, right, to get into this. And, you know, if you want to be noticed in a draft, if you want to have value to a team, if you're maybe a later round wide receiver, take a 70-yarder to the house like that.
Yeah, he knew his touches were going to be limited in this game. And I suppose there's no real look to it. Like I say, it was all skill. He executed multiple moves. He hit the hole. He got some good blocks, to be fair, which is always good. It's a unit. But once the space is there and he sees green grass in front of him, he's gone. Last-ditch attempt to try and bring him down is squandered. And then, yeah, they really needed that. And then, yeah, new quarterback comes in straight away. Like I say, falling down, but gets it out. Two-point conversion. And suddenly, the score's not just closer. It's like, got life. Like I say, they needed that. Like it's in the space of like a minute, they go from a sack to completing a two-point conversion. And that's the kind of like turn of momentum you need.
But for the West, then we see Jackson Yankee makes two big plays for them, two first down, very physical. The Twins acquitted themselves really well in this, but Jackson's turned to shine on this drive.
Yeah. Come in the draft, honestly, I don't know how you tell them apart or draft them differently. They're kind of carbon copies of one another. Someone will prefer the other, but if they do get drafted, I can't see them really going that far apart. But yeah, he started to kind of like win his outside reps. He understands when he needs to kind of come back to the quarterback and be that kind of cushion. Once he's gone past the first down marker, turn around, come back, look for the ball. Just make yourself available. And once you've got it, like say, get the reception and then look to make things happen after that. So, yeah, nice, safe down, nice, safe target. And then he's also physical when he needs to be.
Yeah. And Houston edge, David Ogwebu, like starting to shine now, this West defense. But he was the guy who sort of spearheaded this. I've not really seen that much of him, but he's a big dude with a lot of strength behind him. And one of the few guys they really struggled to contain in this game.
Yeah. Sheds a big tight end, like you say, that has got the block, and he thinks he's won until the quarterback, like you say, tries to escape, and then he realizes and just makes that moment to disengage. And next thing you know, he's bringing him down. And that's ending their drive. And the punt, like I say, wasn't bad. It was a pretty good punt. But the return was just better. So it was one of those where you just, in the blink of an eye, things change.
Oh, it was a Jack Fox-esque punt. It was absolutely great. You heard the thing leave his foot. Sounded like a rocket. But yeah, bought straight back. And that is the kind of play that you need to change momentum. And change it, it did. So the West get the ball back on their seventh drive straight after the sixth because it was returned to them. A pitch to Blake Watson for 1 yard. They tried everything with him on this one. Dump off screens, pitches, all sorts. They really tested his repertoire. Plumlee misses a throw next up, but then Chigozie Anousium, the Colorado State corner, gets pinged for illegal contact. That leads to a first down. Watson runs hard up the gut for four, misses about two tackles and takes a guy with him. Plumlee then finds Cephas Joshua for 5 yards. But then Jabari Small gets stuffed. Easton Gibbs, the Wyoming linebacker, and Aaron Casey, again, the Indiana linebacker, team up on him on third and one. They stop him from getting to the line to gain. It gets to fourth and one. And you know what? They're that far ahead. They think, you know, well, they're 12 points ahead. They go, we're going to be ballsy. We're going to try it again. Fourth and one, Jabari Small, they give it to him again. And who is it? David Ugwebu, who is sealing the left-hand edge of the line, he runs in, blows up the play, takes Small down, throws him backwards, no chance of him getting to the line. And the rushing lane that Small was trying to get, really well clogged up by Christian Boyd, the really impressive Northern Iowa defensive tackle, the SCS prospect who I highlighted before this. He does a great job of plugging the lane. Ugwebu finishes it off. Turnover on downs. And just like that, Ryan, momentum, like in all games, even though Reisman will never admit it, is a real thing. Ugwebu, Casey, the playmakers come up again and they've got a turnover on downs. They've got another takeaway.
Yeah. I mean, bringing in Plummer, I didn't surprise me. It was like a team. I mean, you have to play all of them, but you kind of know that what they're going back to then. Like I say, they know they're going to kind of sit in the pocket. And they went to the what's a watering hole one too many times, didn't they? Give them too many touchdown space. And the defense right now is kind of alluded to what they're going to do. Put your people just a bit closer to him. Just give him a little less room to operate. And in the end, it did work. And then, like I say, when they get in the short yardage situations, Jabari Smalls usually knows what he wants to do. But the holes this time just weren't there for him. When he went to go through, the door was slammed pretty quickly in his face and they contained the edge. They kind of just folded the pocket around him with nowhere to go. And just like that, he's getting the ball back very quickly. They're chunking into lead and they feel like they're going to try and mount a comeback.
Yeah, absolutely. But you say it was really good play by the defense there, made the stop. And this was in really favorable field position as well. So they get the ball back. It's at the start of the fourth quarter now, and they're in the West's half at this point, but the possibility to score again. But then something unfortunate happens. Reed with a screen pass to Mason Plein, who's the Furman tight end. He tries to hurdle AJ Woods, who is the Pittsburgh quarterback. It does not end well for him. He fails, he lands badly, and he has to go off injured. Not seeing how bad the injury is yet, but he wasn't getting up under his own power on the field, but he got about 8 or 9 off of that. Reed then has an incomplete pass to Kabodi, the running back, and then an incomplete pass to Isaiah Williams in the end zone. Really good coverage by Dwight McLaughlin, who is the Arkansas cornerback there. Reed then finds Cornelius Johnson with a little jump pass for 6. And then it gets down to 4th and 4. There was no yards on the Plein one because he dropped it in the end. So it's 4th and 4. Really great pass breakup by Lavelle Bailey, the Fresno State linebacker. He sort of hits it in the air, nearly catches it for an interception, but he prevents that from happening. And they turn over the ball straight back. And once again, right, it's a stop in the red zone from the West's defense. But unfortunately, Mason Plein's the big one here, the injury. That's just horrible for a guy like him at this point. Hopefully it's nothing that's going to keep him too much out of there, but they squandered a big opportunity to really get back into this.
Yeah, this guy on this drive, I reckon this game ended very differently. they would have been in total control. Like I say, they get the ball back in good position. You've got to capitalise on it. Like I say, Reed does okay. Like I say, they get the drive, they work it down to the field, and then, yeah, a good heads-up play by a linebacker. If you can't pick it off, just make sure it's not complete. And in the end, yeah, they do stall right at the death. But yeah, applying, I see what he's trying to do. He's trying to, like you say, he's not had much of the ball. He wants to kind of make that the splash play. He wants to go over the guy. He wants to hurdle him. He wants to be one of the standout guys on the day. But hurdling guys is tough. And when it goes wrong, like you say, he does pay the price. Like say, he also drops the ball. Like you say, he's got 89 yards, and that complete incompletion does happen. But he also does pay the price of, like I say, usually what goes up must come down. And it usually pretty much hurts. So hopefully it's not too bad for him there. But yeah, his day ended abruptly, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is a shame for him there. But I say, some really good play in there. Lavelle Bailey, I know he's sort of underrated coming into this process, but he had a steady good day without looking spectacular, but made the plays when he needed to. Dwight McLaughlin in there. There's just some really good play from the West defense here. They really did their numbers some good for the draft out of this.
Yeah, like I say, would AJ on the, I suppose it's a pass breakup. He almost gets heard up, but he does manage to bring him down in the end. He does manage to force an incompletion. So I suppose that'll go down as a play for him. But yeah, Dwight McLaughlin's a guy I like. Like I say, there's a lot of good guys in the back end. And yeah, they didn't have to be outstanding on the day because their offense did a lot of the heavy lifting. They just had to be solid at times and made the plays when they counted. And they did do that, especially getting down towards in the red zone. They did stand up and be counted where it really matters most. So yeah, they were all pretty good. They were a good unit collectively, which I think is probably what matters most in these, how you work together on short notice.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we're getting sort of halfway through into the fourth quarter now and things are starting to wind down a bit. But the West's eighth, Keaton Slovis comes back in. He rushes for five, does really good to avoid pressure in the pocket. However, he takes a late hit out of bounds by Iyabi Okeonoma, the Charlotte linebacker, former Michigan guy. He gets pinged for 15 for that. But Okeonoma does make up for it on the next play. He gets a 3-yard tackle for loss on Blake Watson. Slovis then finds Joshua Cephas again for a short gain. But Mikey Victor, the Alabama State cornerback, gets pinged for holding, which gives the West a new first down. Easton Gibbs then gets a tackle for loss on Blake Watson for 1 yard. And Blake Watson had already forced a missed tackle on this. He got attacked early as the run kind of started to stutter at this point. And then on second and 11, Keaton Slovis finds Zach Hines, I want to say South Dakota State tight end. I could have got that one wrong, but he makes a wonderful catch in full stride. He's up in the air. He keeps it, gets it in, and he gets smacked by Trey Taylor on his way down, and he keeps hold of the ball. It's an incredibly great catch by him and really good concentration to be able to keep it with the hit after. It's a 26-yard gain. The West then, they try this really funny trick play. Keaton Slovis pitches it to Plumlee, who's on the field. So they've got two quarterbacks on. He has to throw it away. They sort of pitched it to the perimeter and Plumlee was meant to throw it down the line. It doesn't come off. So yeah, Slovis to Plumlee. And then Slovis has an incomplete pass to Jaden Yankee. He then overthrows Jaden Yankee and they have to punt the ball away to the five. But it's at this point, right? It starts to get a little bit messy. It's the fourth quarter. People are getting tired. The run game sort of stopped working. There's, you know, stupid penalties been given out, but sort of, you know, perpetuated in the middle there. Zach Hines making one of the best plays of the day. Like, that's a hard skill, running it full pelt, catching it in the air, taking a massive hit and not coughing the ball up. Like, that's really good concentration from him.
Yeah, that's probably the hardest thing I think about being a tight end is you always have to anticipate contact. You know you're a big body and you know you're going to get hit, especially across the middle. It's a war zone. It's dangerous out there. Whatever you do, don't cough the ball up. Like I say, just keep hold of it no matter what. So when you catch it, which is really good in stride, the moment you get it, tuck it and just brace yourself. And he does a great job of all them and he makes a good play. But yeah, but right now, well, actually for the whole game, the East felt like there was a lack of discipline. There was lots of penalties. I think it was a contribution in a loss. A lot of the East players really hurt themselves. A lot of illegal contact, penalties, like I say, silly penalty, no out of bounds. All that free yardage to give away. And, okay, there were no points, but they didn't really help their cause, did they? Like I say, they just kept giving West like more motivation and momentum. And in the end, right now, yeah, the game is full-on fizzling out. I love the fact they go for a trick player. Like I say, it's supposed to go down the line on like a go route, but it's not there, just throw it away. But yeah, it feels like the game at this point is basically over. A lot of the quarterbacks on the day did struggle. Like I say, there were misses, there were overthrows. Only really Tolley, Tommy Wydell, actually probably did himself a world of good in this game. The others kind of collectively struggled. But yeah, right now you feel like a lot of them, they're tired.
Yeah, and I think there's like 7 minutes left at this point, and this thing kind of fizzled out a little bit, came into sort of a bit of a defensive skirmish. There was one more field goal scored by the West, and it ends up 26-11 when everything is said and done. It's actually a really enjoyable game. So Austin Reed throws a pick to Jarius Munro. Really good. I think he's another one of the Maryland guys, if I remember rightly. I've got that many players to remember. I apologize. Hey?
Tulane corner.
Tulane, that's it. So Jarius Munro picks off Austin Reed, which was a big play from him. There was another field goal in there. But again, this one sort of peters out. But really, really fun game. Really enjoyed it. So let's just go through the stats from this and have a look at which guys really stood out. So when we get there, so the quarterbacks on the West side, let's start with them first. Taulia Tungvailoa, he was 9 of 14 for 142 yards. John Rhys Plumlee was 8 of 10 for 81 yards. And Keaton Slovis was 5 of 7 for 49 yards. No passing touchdowns on the day, but you know, when you look at it through the whole, they were all pretty steady throughout the day. Taulia was the explosive one, but the other two, they kept the field moving. Plumlee obviously running the ball. Like, none of them did themselves any harm in this.
No. If you take out the 50-yard play, I suppose they're all like, they've all got 80, 90 yards. But yeah, collectively, they were all pretty accurate. Their percentages were all pretty high. In the red zone, they didn't have to do a lot, because like I said, a lot of the run game finished off, didn't it? So, yeah, but they did a good job. Collectively as a group, they were much better than the East on the day. That was pretty plain to see. And they were all kind of different styles. So, yeah, they complemented each other well. And when they came in, they all did a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the East side, Austin Reed, he was 5 of 11 for 36 yards and an interception. Jack Plummer was 4 of 10 for 40 yards. And Devin Leary, 5 of 9 for 41 yards. So overall, they were 14 of 30 for 117 yards and a pick. That's not good.
No, they struggled. There's a lot of factors in their struggle. The East O-line performed worse. Their receivers were not on the same page. And the quarterbacks, like I said, they were hurried. Collectively, yeah, as a group, it was a bad day. They sucked collectively, but I can't really hold it all against them. Collectively, the whole offense was bad for most of the game.
Yeah, it was it was a struggle for them indeed. I think there was only 3 sacks, but still pretty big ones in the grand scheme of things. So running backs on the West side, Frank Gore Jr., 6 carries, 87 yards at 14.5 yards per carry. Obviously had a 49 yarder and a touchdown. Blake Watson, 12 carries, 46 yards, going at 4 yards per carry. Jabari Small, 6 of 17. Keaton Slovis had 1 for 6. Taulia had 2 for 2 yards and his rushing touchdown as well. 2 centerpiece running backs of the day. Frank Gore, especially with his big run, but him and Blake Watson kept everything churning, especially early on. Watson lost some average overall later in the game when things moved down a bit. But those two, really impressive.
Yeah, great tandem. One on the ground, one essentially through the air, complimenting each other well, and kept drives alive. And in the red zone, yeah, they did really well. So those two, they carried a lot of the offense. They made their quarterback's life a lot easier. which on the day was probably key, because one run game was really productive, one kind of stood, and the onus was just too much on the quarterback. So yeah, they were a well-rounded unit.
Yeah, and of course, I forgot to mention, Plumlee had his rushing touchdown as well. So 31 carries, 156 yards, 5 yards average, 3 touchdowns for them. On the east side, Kabode, the Louisville... No, not the Louisville running back. Yes, no, I can't remember. No, he's the Louisiana running back. My apologies. 3 carries, 35 yards, 11.7 per carry. Isaac Garendo, who is the Louisville running back, 3 for 24, 8 yards a carry. Isaiah Williams had his 20-yard end around. Tyrone Tracy, the Purdue running back, had 4 carries for 17 yards. Devin Leary and Austin Reed had one each as quarterbacks, and Jaden Sheridan had his one for 3 yards. They were 14 carries, 111 yards, 8 yards per carry. So their run game was pretty good, but they were that far behind. They kind of had to get away from it. So no splash players in there, but everyone sort of had a little moment in there where they showed something.
Yeah, this game was not built for the run because they were behind from like first drive. They were always playing catch-ups. The run game, the numbers are good, but it was just totally nullified because they just had to score quicker. Like I said, there were no splash players. The running backs did all they could, but the game was just not there for them to succeed, unfortunately.
No, absolutely not. Receivers, so west side first. Blake Watson, 6 targets, 6 catches for 65 yards. Terrific day from him. Joshua Cephas, the UTSA wide receiver, 4 catches on 5 targets for 46. Taj Washington from USC, 3 of 4 for 41. Jaden Yankee had 2 receptions on 4 targets for 57 yards. Jackson Yankee had 2 of 2 for 22. Zach Hines had 1 for 26. And then Isaac Rex, Jabari Small, Frank Gore Jr., Mason Fairchild, and Cam Grandy, the Illinois State tight end, all had catches, but all were in single figures there. But, you know, back to Blake Watson. This, if you want to show versatility in the NFL as a running back, you've got to play out the backfield. And, like, as a receiver, he looked damn good in this one. He was forcing missed tackles. He was used in all sorts of concepts, in screens, down the middle of the field. Like, he showed just how versatile the player he is. And his stock will shoot up in the draft because of this.
Yeah, he was perfect on the day. Out in space, relying on blockers, following his blocks as well. When guys right in front of him, he won't go any other way and trying to make magic happen on his own. He used what the blockers gave him. He took what the defense gave him. And in the end, he was a smart player. He made the most of all of his touches. And for someone that's known for the running, showing the other side of his game. And yeah, he did his day a world of good. But in general, I'd say that's 8 or 9 guys. The West just spread the ball around so much better. The East defense just did not know who was getting the ball at any one time because they were all very viable options.
Absolutely, they did. And I just want to give a big shout out to Joshua Cephas. Had a terrific day, but this is why he's the guy I'm hunting like I was Puka Nacua last year. He's the blocking wide receiver who's a threat all over the field but does the dirty stuff as well. Watch his block to spring Frank Gore for his big touchdown. He seals the edge perfectly to give him the gap to get there. But he also had some big plays on the day. Had the 2-point conversion, made plays down the field, in the red zone, in the short game as well. He really did himself a number for this. I expect him to rise up the board as well. On the hang on, let me get my notes back up. On the east side for receivers, Dallin Holker led the way, 3 receptions for 28 yards. Cornelius Johnson from Michigan, he had 2 receptions for 21. Isaiah Williams from Illinois, 2 for 12. And then Tip Ryman and Tejuan Palmer both had catches for 13 and 12, respectively. Casey Washington, Jaden Sheridan, Mason Plyne, Drake Stoops, Tyrone Tracy, Isaac Garendo, Kabode, and McKellen Castles all had 1 catch apiece, but they were all in single figures, just 117 on the day. Not a lot to shout out about there in the wide receiver category, except Dallin Holker. Like, he has shown he is a legitimate Like, he's known for his blocking at Colorado State. He's a big, beefy, powerful man. But as a receiver in critical situations, he was the one they were looking to every time on third down. And for the most part, he delivered.
Yeah, no numbers to write home about, but in situational downs when they needed to convert third downs and they were short of the sticks, he showed himself to be a reliable target that a lot of Rams fans know he is. And if they got to the red zone after converted, probably would have scored. He'd probably been the go-to person in the end zone as well. I say he set the single season touchdown record in like fourth quarters for Colorado State this year. So yeah, unfortunately, if he was on the other side on the West, he would have eaten. He would have been very well fed in that game, I reckon. Unfortunately, the East, I think they let him down. O line, the scheme, the quarterbacks, he just suffered. And everyone else fortunately suffered because of it. None of the receivers really got any luck in because just not a good passing offense, not a good day for passing offense, unfortunately. So yeah, everyone's numbers were just deflated, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move it on to the defensive side of the ball. The East's defense, they may have been beaten, but some standout players here. They had eight tackles for loss altogether, just the one sack on the day. But the main guy of the day, really, well, there was a couple, but Aaron Casey, Ryan, the linebacker from Indiana. We don't talk about Indiana much as a good team because, well, let's face it, they're not. But one unit that's never in question with them is their defense. They produce really good talent there. Aaron Casey, four solo tackles, two assisted tackles, one tackle for loss, also got the holding call on the 2-point conversion, which forced them back and didn't allow them to get it. So brought the pressure in. He looked tough. He looked stout. He had the big run stop as well on fourth and one to turn the ball over on downs. Like, you know, as far as guys go and their performances here, Aaron Casey, he's done his number a lot of good as well. Looked very impressive on a unit that didn't have a lot of impressiveness on the day.
Yeah, a rough first half, but the whole defense did. But second half, adjustment. He came down to the line of scrimmage with a lot more vigor, a lot more energy. And I'd say he was a much better matchup for Blake Watson in the second half. He had his number for a lot of days. I'd say his box play was a lot better in the second half when he needed to be. And he's one of the standout guys. Yeah, got a hold. Like I say, trying to potentially rush the passer or make his way through into the backfield, which nullified a potentially big player, which actually saved the team points on a defense that was on its heels for most of the day and it really couldn't muster a lot. Maybe that's probably a good thing for him. He stood out more because a lot of the guys around there just weren't pulling their weight. And he still, even when the game was dead and buried, which he knew it was, kept playing to the whistle, kept making the tackles, kept showing and being around the ball. So yeah. His head never dropped, even when he knew the game was over and they were going to lose. Tops off a pretty good week for him overall.
Yeah, and the other standout to be shouted out, David Ogwebu as well from Houston. He had three tackles, the only sack for the team on the day, two tackles for loss as well. Another who was an absolute menace to an otherwise pretty good offensive line. But as you know, as far as performances go, that will stand to make you take notice. He made some of the biggest plays in the game, forces the sack. That gets the punt, which gets the punt return touchdown. He's another of the run stoppers as well. Like, you know, great day for him.
Yeah, very disruptive. The West O line really didn't have a lot to worry about all day, but they had to know where he was at all times, and they still struggled to handle him. Like I say, a game-changing player. He was able to get in the backfield, do, like I say, screens, tosses, pitches. He was literally getting there just as the receiver was catching the ball, and they were dead to rights by the time he got there. There was just nowhere for them to go, and he showed really good finishing abilities. So, yeah, that D line really didn't do a lot, but he was the standout of the day on that there. He really carried a lot of it on his back.
He did indeed. A few of the other noticeable guys on the day. So, Tremon Marshall, the Alabama linebacker, he had six tackles on the day. He had a pass defended as well. Marcellus Dial, the South Carolina corner, he had five tackles on the day, a couple of PBUs in there as well. Richard Gebenor, the Troy edge, four tackles for him on the day, a tackle for loss as well. Trey Taylor, the safety from Air Force, four tackles. He had a tackle for loss. They brought him up to the line of scrimmage, did get his ankles broken by Frank Gore Jr., but he kind of made up for that. Njong Mata, the Wisconsin linebacker, he had two tackles for loss as well as three tackles on the day as well. And Jasmei Cromer, the James Madison defensive end, he had a tackle for loss on the day as well. I mean, a few good individual performances there. The Troy guys are legit, though, aren't they? Gibanor, he played really well in this. His counterpart is in the Senior Bowl, which we'll do next week. But, like, these guys, you know, no reason they can't be drafted high just because they're group of five. They played really well.
Yeah. And to say they were crucified by the run on a lot of the day, the defense, it played super well against the run. Like, they were not fooled by a lot of these pitches, these short runs. They were getting down, they were getting behind, they were beating the line of scrimmage, they were, like you said, the blitzes, like the picking up the blocks, it just weren't there. And they were finishing. There were lots of negative players, they were very disruptive in the backfield, all of them, plenty of tackles for loss. They were behind the chains and they were getting picked off because the offense was having to get more creative because they were constantly getting negative plays and being on second, third, and long. And the defense in the East deserves a lot of credit for that. A lot of guys you've named there, yeah, did play really well. They were really aggressive. And when they were on the field and they were able to make plays, they did make them.
Yeah, absolutely. Where were we? Just give me a moment. So the West defense will move on to them next. So top tackler of the day was Lavelle Bailey. He was the linebacker from Fresno State. He had his four tackles, his pass defender, which was nearly an interception. Dallas Gant, the linebacker from Toledo, he had four tackles on the day. But then it was the performance of Grayson Murphy, the other edge from UCLA. Everyone's talking about Liatu Latu with good reason. He's going to be a first-round draft pick and one of the most disruptive players out of this year's draft. Three tackles, two sacks, three quarterback hits, two tackles for loss. I mean, you know, there's padding stats and then there's just been an absolute nuisance on the day. The reason they couldn't get anything going in the passing game was because of this fearsome defensive line. But Grayson, he was one of the big reasons behind this, right?
Yeah, he was everywhere. They moved him up and down the line all day and he just gave those tackles just nightmares. The quarterbacks, he knew for a fact the guys he was going up against were not the best, not the most mobile. And he knew that if he got there and he got hands on them, they were not going to escape him. And yeah, he was the defensive MVP of the day for me. Like I say, he was everything, the run, the pass. Like I say, he had a just great day and he was a constant threat and just screwed up a lot of their game plan. They were kind of like working around how to nullify him. And in the end, that did hurt them because they had to put a lot of attention on him. And yeah, he probably had one of the best weeks out of anyone, if you're talking like instant risers.
Absolutely. And then you had the other Murphy on the D-line, Miles Murphy from UNC. He just one tackle, but they had the sack, a quarterback hit, tackle for loss. Like, not many plays, but splash plays. And he's kind of been one of those names on the periphery, but like he was collapsing in the interior. Another one who, again, dominated and stopped them from playing the way they wanted to.
Yeah, in a really small sample size, whenever he actually got on the field, he made his presence known. Big players, negative players, came on, might say, well, like in relief as a rotational player and helped wreck up a game plan. So yeah, he did really good. And it shows that he's always ready. He's always alert. And when he gets on, he's happy to make things happen. And then he understands his role on the day. So yeah, he did really well too.
And then, you know, you go into the secondary, you're looking there. And again, not many sort of flashy stats in there, but Jarius Monroe gets the pick. And then Tyler Owens, you know, we've mentioned him, the fourth down stop, you know, the run stuff into their turnovers. It's like great day for them too. One from the Power Five, one from the Group of Five, both done themselves no world of good there.
Yeah, Monroe deserved it for the week. Just proving how physical he is, how good he is in zone and how good, like, he deserved the interception. It capped off a stellar week for him. And Tyler Owens, yeah, showed that despite not being the biggest, He's physical. He will play much bigger than his size. He's happy to get down and dirty against some of the bigger guys, and he can tackle. Like I say, he's able to use technique, speed, and combine and finish plays there and then. So a really good week for him. Like I say, not a lot of stats, like I say, because they didn't come up against much of a passing offense, but they were still busy and they still took their chances when they got them, even though a lot of them didn't present themselves. So they were always alert to the threat.
Exactly. And then we've got to mention him, Quintez Stiggers, a tackle, a pass defended, special teams tackles. Like, you know, he did it all early, but then these guys get rotated in and out. So when he was on, he made plays. He had a good week of practice. He made an impression in this game. Do you reckon that's what do you reckon that's done for him and his draft stock?
I think he's probably gone from a UDFA to a day three. I think what he was there to do was to consolidate. Like I say, he had the good year in the CFL, come here and consolidate that. Like I say, have a good camp after coming off the first pro season. Now people have kind of got his name in their mouths. Generate a little bit of buzz. That's what he needed to do. Successfully did it. And I fully expect him to be invited to someone's pro day. Doesn't have an alma mater, but he will get invited to one of them because a lot of people do. The door of schools to go to. He will be there and he'll be working out for someone. And yeah, the tape, the measurables, like everything is there. And now people have seen it. The body type and everything to play matches it. So yeah, he started early, kind of like was eased out of it then. But yeah, his hard work for the week was done.
I wonder if he gets a combine invite. Like that would be.
I think he would because of just he's interesting.
Exactly. And you want to give him a chance. Like he's. Like you said, he's not got the tape to rest on that the rest of them have. Like, let him go to the combine, let him do his stuff, show him how good he is, and then go from there. That's like his big opportunity. So hopefully he gets the opportunity. And then kickers, Harrison Meavis, Cam Little, no missed on the day. Perfect. So special teams, yay, did really well. So yeah, that's kind of it, mainly for the main stats of the game and everything. But I think, like, overall, just to summarize the game, right, it was actually pretty good. And, like, individually, there's some really good performances in there. It's what you want to see in draft season. You want to see some of these guys really, really fighting for it, especially the Shrine Bowl's the younger brother. All the flashy guys are at the Senior Bowl, but there's a lot of great draft talent here at the Shrine Bowl, and they showed why this week.
Yeah. It was a good week. And at like 20, it was like, well, like 23, 23, you think at that point, they're just going to give up. Just like, we don't matter about the scoreline, but they didn't. They took pride in their second half to the East. They said, we're going to make it competitive. We're going to try finish the week on top and come out of it on a high. We're not going to let the scoreline get away from ourselves. And they did well to reel it in and in the end, make it quite a competitive game, which is what you want to see. I know scoreline don't matter, but it also doesn't look good if it's massively lopsided. It looks like one of them just gave up, which wasn't the case. Sounds
no.
very happy.
Like no,
I all line play on the day was patchy, but luckily their practice all week was probably a lot better than they actually played.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of a nice segue to be able to go into the practice phase of it now. So thankfully, during the game, they put up this nice little graphic of all the players who got sort of picked out for their position on both teams for the week. So it's kind of nice that I get to list them out and we get to talk about them rather than me having to go around and try and figure all the training reports and that. So first, starting off with the West. So the practice players of the week, the award given to the guys, both the coaches, players, etc. So at quarterback, it was John Rhys-Plumlee. At running back, it was Blake Watson. At wide receiver, Malik Washington. Tight end, Isaac Rex. On the offensive line, Mason McCormick from South Dakota State. On the defensive line, Logan Lee from Iowa. From linebacker, Darius Mouassau from UCLA. Cornerback, Jarius Monroe from Tulane. At the safety, Dadrian Taylor-Demerson from Texas Tech. And the kicker, it was Cam Little from Arkansas. But these are the guys, right, who got voted as the best trainers during the week. And having watched the practice, I agree. But do you notice a correlation with a lot of the names there? Blake Watson played his ass off. Isaac Rex Very good blocking from him. Should have had a touchdown, which was ruled out there. Mason McCormick, absolutely great blocking on the day. Mouassau set the tone off in the game with the big run stuffing tackle. Jarius Munro got the takeaway. Like, the guys who showed it in practice during the week showed it during the game. Like, some of these guys have just knocked the ball out of the park.
Yeah, you can normally get away with a really good week of practice and in the game kind of go like walk about and go missing, but they didn't rest on the laurels. They doubled down on it on the day and said, we're going to go out of this with a bang and also have a good game. Like I say, Plumlee showed that the arm, okay, the arm strength's not there, but the dual threat, they're able to escape pressure and throw on the run. We all know he can do that. Should it in practice, should in the game. Monroe, like I say, like 6'2", like 210. Big physical imposing corner. He's able to put his will on guys. Like I say, showed all week that in one-on-one drills, he is no mean feat and he's hard to beat. Like I say, and in the end, in the game, gets a takeaway. Got a load of those at Tulane. Great side. Like I say, and then the other side, Isaac Rex didn't get too many look-ins in the game, but in the practices we saw, he's a fantastic blocker. Like I say, he's a really good inline guy, and then you can also then break him out on those crossing, on those outbreaking routes. He didn't see too many in the game, but we know he can do them. He's a very well-rounded person. So yeah, a lot of the guys you've named, like you say, also had good games.
Exactly. So, and then again, you sort of see in the games what they're doing with them. So again, we talked Blake Watson to death. They've used him as a receiver. So Jarius Munro, they played him at safety, and they also played a bit of corner in there as well. He's what, 6 foot, 200 and four, something like that, 205. But like him showing his versatility, playing safe. If teams aren't comfy taking him at corner, he comes from a group of five school, you play him at safety. Like, again, you show the versatility in training, you show it on the field, you get the pick. Like, you can't ask for much more than that.
No, because sometimes, like, say, a small school player, if you only play one position, you're capped. You could only be taken so high. But when you've got a frame like Munro, which is like 6'1", 205, that kind of opens doors to the future. Do you want to be a nickel, a starting safety, a free safety? Can we just move you around? Will you just do what we ask you to do? Can you do it to a high standard? If you can do all of it, you'll get drafted a lot higher than you will just playing corner. Even if you're a really good corner, if you can cover multiple positions, like, the world will be his oyster. Like I say, and a lot of the senior ball and shrine ball, they will ask a lot of people to play positions they never played at college because they think their body type or their skill set might lean into it and they might find, I can do this. Like I say, no one's ever asked me to do it before, but I can do it now. And that will go a long way to the evaluations, the pro days and their interviews. And I'll ask them, how did it feel? Did you feel comfortable playing free safety instead of corner? So yeah, a lot of those guys out there, if you can show versatility, like saying you can, like, that ceiling is not capped. Like, you never know what'll happen. Someone might fall in love with you.
I mean, it's weird with him. Do you think his position is at safety in the long run, or do you reckon it's more hybrid? Because again, people are so concerned about the size on the edge, but I don't know. What do you think with him? Because you've seen a bit more of him than I have.
I don't like hybrids at safety corner. I don't mind, like, safety linebacker. I kind of know which one he is. I feel like the right team will probably put him in one position and make him play it. I'd probably, if he's hit, if I'm him, I want to be a corner. If someone tries to force me to safety, I'd probably be a bit red flag there.
Mm. And then there's Plumlee we've talked about, and it's like he feels like a Mr. Irrelevant type pick this year. Not that he's not irrelevant, but that he's got enough he can offer to a team. And again, he's sort of come here to these trials. He looked all right during the game. He smashed practice during the week. You saw how good he is under pressure, like escaping the pocket. That's an invaluable weapon to have in the red zone. It just kind of it clouds it further, doesn't it? Like, the better he does, you're like, actually, he's got a legit shot getting drafted.
Yeah. He is that kind of guy that will go in the sixth or seventh round. And he's proven he can do more than hold a clipboard. Like, there's nothing wrong in the NFL with holding a clipboard in quarterback three, but I think he's got bigger aspirations. Like I said, the guy has turned his back on playing pro baseball because he thinks he can be a backup quarterback in the NFL or a guy that is on running downs Like I say, he will be that kind of guy. Like I say, I expect him to have run players. Is he Taysom Hill? No. But he's got that. He's got the shiftiness. He can come on and do some things. You might be able to, like I say, they tried a trick play with him to show people how maybe have him on the field at the same time as with the quarterbacks. Yeah, I see him being drafted. And I feel, I don't know if, I feel like he may get drafted and like it might not work out, but I can see him going to like the UFL or something like that. That's probably a good route to him being a player in the NFL. But yeah, I think he should be on he'll be on a practice squad come next October. I think that's a fair place for him to be.
I foresee a draft pick in his future as well. So moving on to the Easts, their practice players of the week by position. The quarterback, Devin Leary. At running back, Tyrone Tracy, the Purdue back. The wide receiver, Isaiah Williams from Illinois. Tight end, Tip Ryman from Illinois. Offensive line, Christian Mahogany, the Boston College guard, I highlighted before this. Defensive line, Christian Boyd, the tackle from Northern Iowa. At linebacker, Easton Gibbs from Wyoming. Cornerback, Josh Wallace from Michigan, the four-year UMass guy, really showed out well this week. Omar Brown from Nebraska as safety. And then, of course, it was the thicker kicker on special teams. Now, maybe not so many guys who showed it in the game this time, right? But, you know, like you said, doesn't really matter about the game all the time. It matters how well you do during the week. And Christian Boyd's now becoming one of the really, really intriguing names for this draft. The Northern Iowa, he's the FCS guy, but he comes up to the Shrine Bowl. He knocks it out of the park all week. I watched a lot of his reps. He looks comfortable amongst some of these bigger, you know, Power 5 offensive line types. And like you say, during the game, didn't have any noticeable stats, but then these nose tackles, DTs, do a lot of the dirty work. He's the guy who clogged everything up so Ogwebu got the turnover on downs, the stop on Jabari Small. Like, he does, you want someone who does the grunt work and has got a lot of room for growth. Like, Christian Boyd is the name that should be on your lips right now.
Yeah. For him, he kind of wanted to just come here, and his probably goal was, like, let's not stick out like a sore thumb. Let's prove I belong here. Integrate into a D-line. Just learn new things as well. Like, say, whatever they tell me to do, just take it on board. Didn't have a flashy game, but that's okay for him. Good week of practice, good drills. Like I said, coming up against the best O-line he's ever played against. He's never played against anyone this good or this standard and tried to take them on. And on his day, he held his own out there, did a credible job, and he fully deserved to be, like I say, picked for the winner of the week on their side, because it's not easy when you come up and you turn up against all these household names, especially, I'd say, an interior defensive tackle. That it's a hard thing to play against, like, say, guys that you're coming up against. Like, say, they're bigger, they're stronger, and they're going to go out there and they're going to try make you feel small about yourself. And yeah, very credible week and one of the better small score guys of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. Really shone out there. And then you flip the other side of the line, like Mahogany. You know, we know Boston College, that the last two guards to come out in the NFL, one's earning $100 million. One was a first-round pick the other year. They make them good there. And Mahogany, it's just the injury the other year that's kind of done him in a little bit, but he's every bit an NFL guard, and he's going to be probably a day-one starter on the right team. He looks so good. Like, just the mentals, everything to do with the game, just jump out at you.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that just feels plug-and-play. And a lot of Lions fans like him because it fits the needs. It kind of just works. Like I say, it can be a run more or a potential right guard. And yeah, he didn't need to show it in the game because, well, like I say, he did his best. He pulled his weight and a lot of other people didn't. A lot of things didn't go right. And in the end, he didn't play bad, didn't play good. He just part of a unit that collectively struggled, but it wasn't down to him. But yeah, throughout the week, he held his own against whoever or whatever was thrown against him. And like I say, he looks like one of those guys that looks pretty much like the ready package. Just going to need some tweaking. Like I say, I expect him to be drafted with the plan to someone to start him.
Oh, absolutely. I've got my tier list ready for the Lions. Tier one is Christian Haynes. Tier two is Christian Mahogany. Tier three is Xavier Gatlin. Pick one of those three. I'd be a very happy bunny going into next year. Who else do we have on their list as well? So Leary didn't show much going into the game. Tracy's very intriguing. He had his 1,000-yard. I don't know. Where are you on Tyron Tracy, right? Like, he's had his one big breakout year this year, but he looked good in this one. Ran hard, got some good yardage, but not the most used running back in the class. So it's always a bit harder to, you know, evaluate them. But he's on momentum, coming off a good year and again, coming off a good All-Star appearance.
Yeah, he didn't get many touches in the game, but when he did, he had good average. The numbers were there. He had like, what, 10 yards to carry? That's a pretty good sample size. I'd say coming off the best season he's had in college, striking while the iron's hot, and what most consider a weak running back class, that all has to work in his favour, essentially. He's clearly made the right decision that he's going to go and make the jump now. And yeah, I think he's going to be interesting product. Like you say, it'd be like how someone's going to use him, how they're going to work around him. But yeah, he's in the right place at the right time. And he should do okay. Like you say, you should be able to latch onto some team. And like I say, if not play, stash him on the running back on the practice squad. But he'll be on a roster next year, and he'll be better for the experience.
Yeah, and overall, Trey Taylor won the defensive player of the week, so he pretty decent game apart from that one from Gore. But that was sort of the team accolades there. But like, you know, you've watched the training, the week training, you've watched the game, like, who do you think won this week? Like, who are you like looking at more, feel justified with? Like, who's risen for you as a result of Shrine Bowl week?
I suppose you can, if you want to say risen or who's there, for me, that had a really good week, the right tackles. So Roger, is it Rosterson?
Rogerston.
Yeah, him, Kingsley, Suma, Tayamaya,
and
Fuaga. Like I said, those three look like they could be plug and play, and they're going to be strong candidates to be drafted fairly high. They look like future potential NFL right tackles, whether now day one starter, because some of them are going in the first round, or projects working later on. But yeah, for me, offensive line, like I say, especially a lot of the outside guys with some of the interior, I was really happy with them this week.
The South Dakota guys, they really did well this week. They're, again, more intriguing prospects.
Yeah, tight end, receiver, line, like I say, they all did really well.
It's so impressive. They have five guys there. I think they were one of the most represented teams, and they're an FCS side. And to be honest, all of them did pretty well, and they got a running back at the Senior Bowl. So that kind of just goes to show you the quality of that team this year. So, I mean, yeah, for me, obviously Frank Gore stands out, like the younger, the questions over him were, you know, his durability over his time, but his speed is not in question. You watch his touchdown run. This guy, he's small, he's slippy, and like, you just can't tackle him. It takes a hell of a lot to bring him down, but he's performed well during the week. He's performed well in the game. I'd like to be fully on board bringing him here. Like, we, you know, it's like a running back three to bring in. And, you know, when the first two have kind of tired an opposition D-line out, send him in time after time after time. It's like he'd get a lot of success with us. But I think he's going to get drafted a lot higher than people give him credit for. Obviously, Towley has done really well. I'm really impressed for him, but I just don't know what. Is Taulier a draftable quarterback? He's kind of like Plumlee. I don't know. Like him and Plumlee, is he more likely to be drafted than Plumlee or less likely? I do feel like some team might like him enough to draft him.
Teams don't seem to like air raid quarterback.
Yeah.
But that's still what Taulier Tungavailoa is. He's got the better arm, and he can command a better passing offense, which means he probably has to step up on Plumlee. But I question the dual threat and the ability to escape and command a running offense as well.
Yeah. Who else did? So Malik Washington was the other. Didn't do anything during the game, but he looked great during practice. Because again, he's the other who's coming off the 1 year of production for Virginia. Like, had a stupidly, insanely good season for them. But it's kind of like, is it consistent on a basis? And like, just everything about him seemed right. The route running, the catching, like, he's got a good pair of hands. He's going to be dangerous. I know he's short. He's a short slot receiver, and we don't need a short slot receiver, but we're doing winners and losers for the week. So he's got to be in there. And of course, as I mentioned, Christian Boyd, he's one of the big winners. I would be really interested in us taking him. Like, I would, as a guy to draft and develop. I know we got Broderick, but hell, you can't have enough good guys on the D line. In terms of guys who struggled a little bit more, because unfortunately, as much as there are, guys who succeed in weeks like this, these are guys who also struggle with injury. And I think injuries banjaxed a couple. So obviously Mason Plyne is now injured, which is not great from him. But the other injury of the week, and he couldn't play, was Jalen Coker, who everybody was looking forward to seeing the Holy Cross wide receiver. That's a big blow for him as well. I'm not sure how severe his injury is, but like, this was his stage to shine because he's done really well in the offseason so far. And like, his star was rising, and this is just unfortunately going to bump it a little, right?
Yeah, decent practice, coming off a really good year. And he was the kind of guy that had to say, like, I can go up against the top FBS defensive backs, especially in a game. Like, he's like built off a production line, like, say, like 6'3, 6'4, 250. He's got the frame, but you need to see it in action. He's very impressive, like, at distance, and you watch the tape and look at the accolades, but in real time, is kind of where people will make their decisions on him. So you hope that he's going to be fit enough to, like, say, take some part or have a good go at the pre-combine, like, say, that process. I'd like to see him invited to the combine. Like, say, I'm not sure if he will, depending on his health, which would be a real shame. And then you feel like he's on the periphery of not getting drafted, but then also that makes him potentially a huge steal for someone if they do get him as like a priority UDFA.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in terms of other guys who struggled during the game, Julian Pearl, I mean, he's not in college for Illinois, and I've seen people draft him for us, but he can't deal with speed rushes. He's given up an insane amount of sacks in college because he's a big, beefy guy who can sort of get the bigger, tougher edge rushes, but you put a little bit of speed against him, and he crumbles. You saw Grayson Murphy and you saw Solomon Bird. Like, they almost looked like they weren't trying to beat him. Like, they didn't have to try to beat him. And that's incredibly worrying because when you get to the NFL, even the big guys are insanely athletic and will be able to put a speed rush on you. Like, he's one whose his draft stock has just gone through the floor this week. He's like struggled in practice as well.
Yeah, it's a hard life being an offensive tackle, but the fact that it looked like guys had to do very little to win against him, that's probably the thing that people find most alarming. Like when they were getting like sacks and pressures at not at obviously he's trying to make them work for it, but it kind of looked like at times where they got it a little bit easier. Like they just he was too slow off the snap and things like that. And like they were already on him before he knew what were coming. And they were just able to overwhelm him. And if you're a defensive lineman, that's one word you can't ever be used. You can't be overwhelmed by someone. And that, yeah, that was worrying. That it didn't just happen once, it happened more than once. Like he didn't learn from it. So yeah, rough outing for him.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, sort of goes both ways. Was there anyone else who you were kind of not impressed with or sort of went a bit down in the estimations, whether during the game or through training?
After coming off such a big year and like being here, like this was a huge opportunity for Plummer. And a lot of things need to happen for a quarterback to have a good day. But like you say, he had some chances, he missed some shots, missed some targets. Like all week, like you feel like he's one of my experienced guys, one of the guys that will be getting strong looks at as like a QB3. someone that you could kind of work long-term project. Didn't do himself any favors coming off like his best year and what could have been like. Yeah, I say he was quickly jumped, and you could see like he was yanked from that game. What felt pretty quickly, like they were happy to just go away from him. But when he came back, they slowed down again, didn't they? I say it kind of stagnated when he came back into the game, like he broke up the rhythm. So that's not the best sign for a guy that he's no spring chicken either.
No. It was disappointing from him. The other one I just want to mention, Renardo Green, I put him in my team to watch for this, the Florida State corner, but he missed a bit of the week's practice. He missed a day through injury. He looked a bit rough during practice. And he had that horrendous penalty against the Yankee during the game, which gave up a touchdown in the end. He did make the pass break up on there. But when you got guys like Stiggers and Monroe who were playing much better than you, one's a CFL guy, one's a Group of Five guy. You've just come from one of the best teams in college football this year. Like, that was your opportunity to consolidate yourself in day three. And you've kind of let it slip a little bit when other guys you've maybe let get the leap on you now. So it was a shame. But overall, I was really happy with this. The pair of running backs, Gore and Watson, loved them. Malik Washington looked great in training. So did Evan Anderson. Didn't play much in this one, but he had a cracking week, the Florida Atlantic tackle. And he weighed in like 30 pounds less than anticipated. He's like 356. He came in at 320. And he looked every bit 320. He looked great. So him and Christian Boyd, terrific. Camera looked all right as well. So I got a lot to like from the players I had in there. The only other thing I'll quickly mention before, did you see the offensive tackle from Howard? Is it Dankwa? He weighed in at 396 pounds. The man would eat me like a snack.
It's a bit of an issue, I think. Like I say, it's too heavy.
He was getting positional training during the week as well, which is never a good sign. Like when you're one-on-one with coaches, that's like, uh-oh, there's an issue that...
He needs a dietitian.
Yeah, like 400 pounds is...
He's mobile at 400 pounds. He just will... He can struggle to get through him and around him, but faster guys are just going to chew him up and spit him out.
Yeah, and you're coming from Howard as well, so you've not even come up against the crafty veterans.
If he wants to go to the combine, like, he has to be in tip-top shape because they will be looking at how much he weighs in at and his cone drills and that. They'll crucify him for it if they think he's way too heavy.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so, yeah, it's kind of everything in terms of the game and the training, some of the guys we thought were winners and losers. Again, very enjoyable. We got some questions in here, so let's get to some of them. I know Mike's been asking a lot tonight, so where are we? We've got some rankings to do for later shows from the Shrine game. So from the Shrine Bowl, do you have any round two, three players that the Lions would be interested in? So any of these guys who you'd be picking day two out of the ones you like and who have impressed you enough to maybe for you to impart a second day pick on them?
That feels like a reach on a lot of them I've seen right now. But I suppose guys like Mahogany has to be one of them.
You got my answer there.
I suppose, well, yeah, actually, Kingsley, Suma, Kayamaya, like I say, because I reckon, like I said, well, we know the Oregon State tackle is it Flag. We know he's going first round. He's just unattainable. Like I say, so I reckon, like I say, Kingsley, he's an offensive tackle prospect I do like. And I reckon he's like a second, third rounder. I think that's very attainable for us.
It's tough, isn't it? Because these are like the day three guys.
Like day three guys, a lot of them.
Who would you splurge? Who would you like? You know, because this is us. You can draft if you want, but is there someone who like you draft you value so much highly above anyone else? Like one of the Yankees or someone like that. You know, one of the like. Who would you go big and pick a day two pick on if you're going to do it out of them? Then, even though consensus may not agree with you, because screw consensus.
I might take the kicker with an extra third.
The thicker kicker. Wow.
To draft him, if I'm honest.
He's going to go early.
Yeah, I think if Jay Moody went in the third, like, why can't this guy go in the third? Like, I know it looks upsetting, but yeah, if I'm looking for someone I'd love to reach on, give like maybe a fourth rounder, I think I'll take him.
This is tough because the Shrine Bolt is predominantly day three. These are like your developmental draft diamonds, as you call them. I think if I'm going to stretch for one, I would spend a day two pick on Mo Camara. I just he's undersized for an edge, but I love him, and he's very disruptive. He's the best player coming out of the Mountain West for the draft. I'd 100% give a pickup for him. I'd give one for Xovia Gadlin as well, the Liberty offensive lineman, the do-it-all guy on there. I'd impart a day, I'd impart a round three pick on him as well. If any of the others who I'd go that high on.
At round three, I might draft Anthony Gould as a returner.
And then development receiver.
Yeah, we could do with a backup receiver potentially. So I think I'd probably spend a day. Yeah, I might give a third round on him.
Yeah, it's kind of tough in this regards there. The only other one, I may give up one for Jalen Carly. He's the Missouri safety who was there. Like, I may be for him, but again, that these are a lot of the day three. These are a lot of the really exciting day three picks on there. Hell, if I'm gonna be brave, I might give around a day two pick to Christian Boyd. But we've just done that to Broderick Martin, so that would kind of maybe defeat the point there. Let us have a little look on any other bits. So this is kind of a general draft one, but oh, hang on, this is quite interesting actually. What's your priority for positional need? And is there a position that you're picking two players in for the draft upcoming? So, there's obviously free agencies to come, but as it stands, like, where's your most urgent positional need and where would you double dip?
So I will go corner, center, edge, guard. I think we're going to lose Frank if maybe mid-season. If he gets hurt, I reckon he calls it a day. So I want a top-notch center that can step in.
Ooh, so you're double dipping corner as well, and is that
Yeah,
all?
we're going back to corner on like round four, five.
I'm with you on corner. I think it's corner, guard, edge, although they could be two, like 2A and 2B. Corner, guard, edge. We still need a DT. Like, I still think DT's up there as well. Maybe a safety if we cut Tracy. So, but certainly corners where I double dip as well. And then, hell, maybe I might go edge. I don't know if Pascal or that get kicked inside. Maybe I double dip at edge, get a development edge as well. Depends on Houston, I guess. But it's tough. Oh, what am I saying? All right, back to the original question. Who would I spend a day two pick on? I'd spend it on Josh Cephus. I'm sorry, I completely forgot you there, Joshua. This year's Puka Nacua. Just saying. Not the same player, but same mold. He'd be absolutely worth a day two pick. So Joshua Cephus, I'd do that for as well. Well, as we're doing it then, and we're here, and we got the bits. Who would your corner be? Like, there's a sleuth of corners at the top. I guess I know already know this, but for those who don't know, like, out of the sleuth of top guys, if you had your pick, who would you have?
For being realistic, who I think is going to be there for 28.
Oh no, you can be greedy. You can be greedy if you want. We can trade up for them. Doesn't matter. Like, who do you like most out of them all? That's what we want to know.
I like Nate Wiggins. I think he's also, if you sit tight, I think he's probably going to be there. Like I say, I like TJ Tampa, but not first rounder. I love Cooper DeJean, but I'm struggling at outside corner to start him straight away. And we don't really have the flexibility to put him in the Brian Branch position, so I can't draft him. I say Kool-Aid McKinstry's flashy, but he's also could just totally flame out, and that scares me.
No, I thought Cooper would have been the instant answer for you. Or is the injury
like
kind of...
I also think he's going to go on way too soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I reckon we would have to trade up to like 20 or something. The mocks you see him right now, like they're going crazy for him because of versatility.
See, you know, I'd trade up for Jezania and I'd just say, I think we'll trade up. Brad's all about great players, not picks, not amount of picks. So I was thinking, yeah, but your corners, I'm not settled yet. I still don't know who out of the top. Like, I'm an Abrams Drain guy. Like, I am. I just think he's as good as these guys at the top.
The
but
guy, is he Rakestraw. I've seen him sent to the Lions quite a few times at 28.
You know, I'd take him.
What about him?
I'd take a Missouri corner. I've always preferred Abrams Drain, but Rakestraw has like the higher upside. I think that's why they're going with it, but they're both great. I'd take Carly's as well. Like that Missouri DB room this year, it's like the Illinois DB room last year. Like it's just loads of guys coming up out of it. So yeah, absolutely cannot go wrong with it at all. Any other questions anybody's got, let us know before the end, because we're about getting to the end of the show now. As I say, we're going to do the Senior Bowl this week. We just want to show the love to the Shrine Bowl guys a little bit and chat a bit more about them this week. Dan Mack asked us a question earlier on YouTube. He goes, where do you reckon Zach Zinter drops to, depending on his injury rehab? How much of a setback is it? Like, Zach Zinter would have been round two, I guess. He'd have been a high day two guard before the injury, but screwed his tibula and fibula. He's supposedly going to be able to do some trading before the draft, which I find highly unlikely, but if he is, great. But how far has it set him back?
Probably late. It's now about a fifth. I reckon if you take a fourth rounder and you maybe have to see him for his rookie year, I'd probably be pretty happy to do that, to be honest.
Yeah, because, I mean, they did it with Ajabo. Was it the Ravens did it with Ajabo? He had his big injury. They sat him for a year. Don't actually know how he's doing there, but I still think someone will take him. Like, in the guard class is good, but...
Someone don't need a start straight away. They'll take him. They'll just sit him for a year until he's ready to go.
You know what? I could easily see him going in comp pick territory. You know when teams get comp picks that they're not expecting or whatever, and it's kind of one of those, oh, yeah, we kind of got it. If you can get him with a comp pick, I think you're laughing. Like one of those third-round comp picks, you're laughing to the bank. He'd be worth that in the long run. But it's a shame he got hurt because he is bloody good. But there are just, unfortunately, some great guards who are healthy who are going to go before him. Christian Haynes, all on that boat there. Lisa goes, Brad will try to get Tracy to take a pay cut. I mean, would you want Tracy at a pay cut? Or is it just time to cut the boat? This is Lion stuff now, but we're there.
I think he'd do it. Actually, no, I don't think Tracy would. I reckon he should just get cut, and I think he'll go probably play somewhere else. I don't think he wants to be a rotational player here, a backup. Nah, just cut him.
Mike goes, cut. Yeah, I think you've got to cut the boat here. Let the young guys go in there and do it and maybe try. Yeah, I would say it does seem pointless bringing in a vet to replace a vet, but if he's not playing, like, he's not even getting in the game day team, the injury just must be too serious.
29. Can he afford to waste a year here and just not see
yeah.
a field? I think he'll have to be cut, to be honest.
I agree with you there for sure. Were there any other bits that were asked in there? Brent goes, who's the Boston College O-line coach that's turning these lads into pros? That's Applebaum, who's there. That's weird because Boston, we're a college pod. Let's mention this. I am utterly disappointed in Jeff Hafley. Like, I was looking forward to seeing that Boston College team next year in Castellanos and that, and then he's gone to the Packers of all teams. Like, it's a good job for him, but I kind of feel robbed of what Boston College could have been next year.
Yeah, finished the year really, really strong. And if they started next year in a good position, then they'd have probably been pretty strong on the stretch. Sucks for Castellanos. I suppose it's one of those positions where if you put yourself in it, do you turn down that crazy promotion? Probably not. I get it from that side. But yeah, BC have struggled for a couple of years and it felt like they were about to turn a corner. And now the portal window's open. I say because the new rule now, they get 30 days. Who jumps? Who leaves? If they lose in a major, they're back to square one.
Yeah, absolutely. We've done Lions priority in the draft there. Just bear with me. There was something else I wanted to mention. Mike the Marine asked, who's our top three inside offensive line? So guards and centers. So I think this is a more draft, like more of a draft related question. But we can quickly do this one as the last one to get out of here. Who's your top three interior line guys for this draft?
It's hard because a lot of guys that are tackles that are going to be made to play guard.
So if we go in, right, I'll answer this while Ryan thinks. So if we're going interior, like interior guys alone, Christian Haynes is number one. Powers Johnson is two. And three, I want to say Mahogany is as high as three. Yeah, screw it, you know what? I'm going to do it. Mahogany's three. That's for me. Christian Haynes is a freak of nature who people are going to be sorry they passed on. He's absolutely amazing. Powers Johnson's going to be a starting center for years. They're both going to start wherever they go. Mahogany will as well. I know there's other guys around there, but for me, they're my three. And I wouldn't mind any of them being on the lines, to be fair. Pass back to your eye. Anyone else? Any other names you want to throw in there for the top three IOL?
Beebe, Chad Beebe, is it?
Oh, Cooper.
I reckon I think, yeah, I'd say he's third. I'm gonna say Mahogany's second. Yeah, I can kind of get behind Haynes being first overall, despite the short frame. Like I say, he's just explosive. Like I say, despite, like I say, you can look at like a size and weight, but for me, for a guard, that really doesn't worry me. Like I say,
Yeah.
they're always a bit shorter. They're always a bit
Oh,
heavier
yeah.
than usual tackles. So yeah, that's kind of just how they're. He's compact, which means, like I say, he's pretty volatile and explosive.
Yeah, and he talks so much shit. I absolutely love him. Like, he talked the
Pure
Louisiana.
centers. I struggle to think of many that come off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Straight up centers.
So you've got him, and then you've probably got Van Pran after that. Like, you're down to Van Pran, and then you're going, guys, you've got the Arkansas center. I should be able to remember his name because Razorbacks are one of my teams. Well, they're not now, KJ's gone, but there's a few, but not many at the top of the draft. Just a couple of other questions to address before we go. Mike at the start of the show asked, and let me go back to the top because I've missed this. He goes, I'm so lost on this draft or behind from past seasons. Do you have a top 100? My problem is round three picks. Help, please. So, actually, I don't know if we'll be able to, we should be able to get it out to you, but Matt does a draft consensus board of all like PFN and PFF and all that sort of stuff and uses it to kind of make his own big board, an average big board out of everything, which gives you rankings from one down to like 400. It is in the domain somewhere. I'm sure we'll be able to get it to our Twitch and YouTubers if you want to have a look at it. It's not ours personally, but it's from, all the major pundits around and stuff. Me and Ryan will have our own ranking system, which he also asked us later. Can you present your top five from offensive line, defensive tackle, defensive end, and from cornerback and wide receivers? Me and Ryan will do our rankings sort of later on in the process, probably when the probably to the combine. You finish it off with the combine. We'll present our own personal ranking system after that. So certainly we will do all those. We'll do them for every position as we usually do as well. But yeah, I'll see if I can get Matt to get that in for you. Joshua Mercer goes, wasn't Cooper Beebe eligible for last year's draft too and opted to go back to school? Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure one of us mock drafted him. I don't know if it was, I feel like I might have done that. But a lot of guys went back who we sort of tried to draft last year. So yeah, Cooper Beebe certainly was one of those guys. So I think that is about everything. Let me just check. Twitch, YouTube. Oh, hang on. Lisa goes, I don't disagree about Walker. I would cut Walker, but I'm not Brad Holmes. She goes, what about Fuaga? I know he is listed as a tackle, but he could move to tackle after Decker is done. He's a right tackle. I mean, I'd draft Taliese Fuaga quite happily. Man's a snow shovel at right tackle. He is a great right tackle. You run behind him, he will run for days. And I think his pass pro is better than people give him credit for, but he's probably not going to be there, but you'd draft him, right? Quite happily. Or would you?
I don't know, because if I draft him, yeah, one, he's gone before he picks, you've got to move up, but two, who moves to left guard? Who moves to left tackle?
Yeah.
Someone or Fuaga.
And you can't have one of them. And you can't have have him sat on the bench for a year, can you?
In the first round, it basically means you're saying this is Decker's last year, whatever happens.
Yeah.
Get rid of it.
Yeah. But it could be a thing next year. It could be Decker's last year. Who knows? It's just, until we know about Frank, this is very difficult because there's only so many picks you can use on the O-line. Are you going to use a tackle slash guard, or do you need a specific center?
Frank will know what he's doing before the draft. He will have to have a conversation, sit down before they build their draft boards.
I think he will.
And they'll be like, are you going to play this year or not?
He's got 3 years left on his deal. I think he does at least one more, personally. I'd draft his replacement this year, his long-term replacement. That's why I'd draft Van Pran. I'd sit him for a year behind him and get him ready for when Frank does retire. Mike Samra still, cornerback from Michigan, goes where from Brent? Sorry, Matt, I know you're in, but I will. Samra still, any thoughts on him and where he goes very quickly?
For me, pure slot corner. Pure nickel.
Yeah.
Can't play outside, which means he's limited.
Yeah.
He's not coming here.
No, and he's in a stacked corner class. Like, there's double-figure corners who could go in the first round, who have more versatility.
In the Michigan corner, we're probably taking Will Johnson to play on the outside.
I'd like that, but he just doesn't get as much love. So, we'll do a corner show eventually, because the corner class is just, it's like a buffet this year. You've got to find the right guy, but there's plenty of them. Right. Thanks to everyone who has joined us this evening. We've gone on for a while now. Hopefully you've enjoyed our breakdown of the Shrine Bowl and some of the smaller school guys from there. It was good fun. We will do the same with the Senior Bowl next week, and then we'll get into other draft-related stuff as well. If you've got anyone, players you want us to look at, position groups you want us to look at in specific, we'll do segments for the shows, and we'll do our best there for you. We'll pick out some of our favorite guys for you to have a look at. But as I say, always open to requests for everything. Thanks to everyone on Twitch, to Mike, to Josh, all that. Hope you're doing well. Oh, and he did send it over there. Matt's in there, so great. Appreciate that. And thanks to everyone who's on YouTube. Brent, hope you get well soon, buddy. We're worried about you. I'm glad to see you've popped up in the chat. Hopefully you're doing better this time next week by the time we're back. So we're thinking about you. Hopefully you recover very soon. Thanks to Lisa and to everyone else who's joined us on YouTube as well. We really appreciate it. To Dan, you know, we really appreciate you coming, talking college football with us. Enjoy the rest of your week. Have a great weekend. We shall see you on Monday for the next Detroit Lions podcast, where it's award season. So wear your best attire and let's have some fun. Until then, just remains for me to thank Ryan, and we shall see you soon. One pride.